And a good morning. Good morning, JJ.
Good morning, Chris.
And good morning to everybody out there in Radio Land.
All of you that are listening, we're so glad you're here.
You know what? It's a beautiful day here in Mount Vernon. You know why?
Why is it
in Mount Pleasant, this whole Northeast Texas area is being covered, not just with cooler temperatures,
nice,
but rain.
Right. You know what I always had a problem with this time of the year?
The problem?
I've had a problem.
No.
Yes, and my problem is, if it gets around the 60s, people feel the need to make the buildings like 78, 82
degrees. I know. People, that is, we live in a fallen world, JJ, and part of that is that they feel like they have to run the heaters when they get a chill.
Yeah, and it's like just get a little, just enough that'll take the chill out of the air.
Don't wear a jacket. Okay, let's crank up the heater.
Yeah. Don't wear a jacket. Crank up that heater. And here's the deal: is I'm a big guy. I mean, I don't need to sit in like 85 degree heat if I don't need to, especially when it's beautiful outside.
Yeah.
It's the wildest thing, and what always irks me, and maybe somebody can straighten me out about it, is that, you know, we'll go into church services, and it's like, well, we got to make it 90, because we have people that get cold, and I want to be like, yeah, but they can put on a blanket. There's only so little that I can wear and be appropriate, and I mean, otherwise, I'm going to be drenched in sweat.
Yeah.
Unless we're doing some of that, like, steam box yoga. Like that. So, those that are listening, just 70. 70, put your heater at 70, maybe even 68, and you're going to be fine.
You won't freeze to death.
You won't freeze to death.
But, you know, I tell you, in the Bible, you'll see people laying in bed with, like, King David. Mm-hmm. And it's like the purpose for that. And you know, I think they were women, like young maids or something. And I, when I first saw that, I thought, "What in the world is this?" And
it's like, whoa, creepy. Yeah, and I remember preaching school reading over that,
and Bill Burke having to explain, no, this wasn't done as like David wasn't a creepy old man. It was done to keep him warm.
Yeah, that's it. But see, in the old age, people get cold,
right?
Like the blood circulation's not what it needs to be, and so when you have a congregation when Bible class is in a winter on a Sunday morning, and you've got a bunch of older people in there, that they're actually very cold, and that heat probably feels good to them.
You know what we need to do?
It doesn't feel good to me, but
we need to market a nice looking. What were those things called? Snuggies? Is blankets with sleeves? Market some that look really nice,
yeah,
that you wouldn't be ashamed to wear during church services, and do something with it that would appeal to those people with a propensity to be cold.
You know, we have a lot of blankets and pillows in church.
We do.
Footstools and stuff. You know where everybody sits.
Oh, yeah. I saw one of our sweet ladies get cold the other night, and I'm sitting there, like, rubbing the sweat off my brow, and you got two people helping her cover up in a... with a big old blanket, and I'm like, it's so weird how all of our bodies are so different. Just how we regulate temperature and what is comfortable, and it's just, I'm not saying I'm right and they're wrong, or they're wrong and I'm right, but I think I said the same thing, but you know what I mean.
But I do, that is the one thing about wintertime at the church building I don't like, is the heater.
Right.
Yeah.
When it comes to when it gets actually cold for the 3.5 hours that we get real cold during the winter here in East Texas, I can understand keeping it warm, but when it's like, oh, it's gone from 70 to 60, we better crank this bad boy up to 80.
You know,
there's
at home,
a
we,
difference.
We have a new heat pump and stuff that's, I guess, it's a couple of years old, mm-hmm, but we keep that thing set about 68, and if it gets below 68, it'll crank on, but it never gets above 68.
That's
so
nice. That's a perfect temperature.
It really is. But anyway.
68,
all right, well, so announcements. What do we got going on in the
All
in the
right.
Neighborhood?
Next Monday, we're going to be at the North Jefferson Church of Christ, Monday, November 13th, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, 2, 8. Our host congregation is Blodgett. Not only are we going to have the testing amongst the kiddos and texting amongst the adults, but coming this week, we are going to have a free-for-all. That's what we agreed to, right? With the Kahoot thing?
Yeah, yeah, explain that for a second.
All right, there's a website called Kahoot.com, and you can get on there and put in your questions about different types of things and make the quiz, and then people will can get on their phone and go to Kahoot.it. And through Kahoot.com, you can run the quiz, and whoever has a smartphone or tablet can sign in and do it. I was introduced to it at the Blaze Youth Rally up in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Alex Warnes is the director of that youth rally lectureship type thing, and wonderful. I hope we all go next year. But he does a great job, and I was introduced to Kahoot, and we're really going to start utilizing it. I'd like to see us do some cool stuff with that.
I think it'd be kind of cool. We could be in cahoots together.
Hey-o! Exactly. But we're going to have that. We're going to have a free-for-all winner, which I'm pretty excited about. And Blodgett's going to host, and they normally do a good job. And imagine we'll get some Little Caesars pizza, and think it's going to be a good night of fellowship.
Yeah, I think so, too. This coming Sunday, you know, I've got that it's kind of a community outreach, almost like an abbreviated VBS over at the New Boston Church.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is at 3 o'clock.
Right.
I'm afraid, I don't know how long it takes to do all that,
mm-hmm.
but I'm a little bit afraid I'm not going to make it back on time for the 4:45.
Right.
I mean, I could. I don't know for sure. And I was just, you know, kind of hoping.
Oh, you
I
will.
Could,
did okay. you do it last year?
Yeah, I can't remember how it went.
You go for about 20 minutes and then you're done. So
oh, okay, cool.
It's a good deal. You've reminded me. Our buddy Kevin sent me a message yesterday and I forgot to respond. So
you're up too, aren't you? Pretty soon.
Well, no, I haven't set a date yet. I wasn't able to do it this fall. He's asking if I can do it in the spring.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so I was in and out of doctor's offices with my mom yesterday. So I put that one on the back burner. I need to get a hold of him.
Hey, tell us about the annual Shirts Lectures. It's coming up November 12th through the 15th. What have they got going on there?
I don't know. I've never attended Shirts.
I think it's their 14th annual.
Oh, and I'm waiting for the Pants Lectures, so...
Shirts. Oh, mercy. Well, I don't have a schedule of who all's speaking or anything like that, but I just knew that that it is coming up.
Let's click on that.
What's that?
The view here. See the topics covered.
Where is that?
Over here.
Oh. Okay, well, now we can talk about it.
Oh, let's see who they got this year.
Well, they got Stan Crowley, which preaches there, Keith Mosier, one of the gospel greats, one of our senior staff members of the Brotherhood, and Dan Flournoy, which
Rick
is
Brumbag.
Has got a lot of family counseling knowledge.
Yeah,
I don't know Tim Burrows. I've heard of him.
We read Dan Flournoy's book in preaching school, and it was a good book. He's an elder over at Hanley.
Yeah, when he was a regular preacher, mm-hmm. you know, before he became an elder in the church and does all this counseling stuff, he has to have a local work at the Comanche Church of Christ, which was just south of where I was in De Leon.
Didn't know that.
Back in the day. Yeah, that was kind of cool. We had Comanche County in common. Hey. Rick Brumback's going to be there.
Clay Bond. Yeah. Clay Bond, teacher over at Southwest, not Brown Trail.
Yeah, of course you got Michael Light, Josh Romo, Mel Hutzler. Mel Hutzler was a we've kind of been just around where he was. We've known him for a good long time. Seemed like
Jim Word. I'm friends with him on Facebook.
You got a lot of South Texas guys down there.
And then Jason Rollo is going to end that day. That's pretty good. Next day, Tim O'Bannon. I'm friends with him on Facebook.
We appreciate the O'Bannon family very much.
He's a nice guy. Joey Davis is a real nice guy, too. Yeah. Johnny Skaggs. I didn't know Johnny Skaggs was coming in. And then you got Tom Waycaster, Brown Trail grad and current teacher at Memphis School of Preaching.
Yeah.
Sam Wilcott, our buddy Sam.
Yeah. Yeah, so Dave and Louanne Rogers are going to be there.
Yeah, that's going to be a good day. And let's see what Wednesday is. Trent Kennedy, our buddy, Shiny Head, does a great work down in San Marcos.
Our brother Randy Robison, our motorcycle friend, is going to be there.
Do I know him?
I don't know.
I don't think
he's
I know
a good
him.
Guy though.
I don't know. Josh Ortiz, good guy. Philip Patton, good guy. Devin Dean, good guy. Don Walker, man, that Wednesday is stacked.
Yeah, do you know anybody that's not a good guy on here?
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't.
Carly, we forgot Carly.
It's either they're a good guy or I don't know them.
So you got three ladies speaking on the thing to the women. You got Carly, Luann, and Jennifer.
Man, that's a good lineup right there.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty good little. Yeah, and they're dealing with the Psalms, JJ. This would be something that if you were interested in, I'd help you get the time off and pay your gas to go down there.
No, I'm good. I don't want. I've got other stuff for my days off. But
okay, well,
you know, I want to commend our elders because I don't know. Different elderships are different, and what our elders have done is they have given us a lot of days off. I'm not going to say how many, but basically what they
said. 6 weeks worth of days.
Yeah. So instead of saying you get this much for vacation and then having to say, I'd like to go to this and why, they just say, here's all these days.
Go do
you want to go to lectureships? Go to lectureships. You want to go to retreats? Go to retreats. You want to take a vacation with your family? You can do that too, but it's your days. You pick. So that way they're not having to juggle where we're going and why, and then us taking vacation. I just think it's a brilliant way to do it. I think it would be great for everybody to do it that way, but if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. I don't know. So.
Oh, well, let's talk about Jonah. What's going on there?
Wait, we got one more thing to mention. It's our very own Ladies' Day.
Well, shame on me for forgetting that.
Oh, man, it's all right because I got the flyer in front of me, so you didn't have it in front of you, so it's my fault for not bringing it up. November 11th.
That's this Saturday.
This Saturday, Catherine, don't call me Kathy Baker, is going to be...
Did she really say that?
Yeah, she doesn't like being called Kathy. Remember it ran in our bulletin for a little while where it said Kathy Baker, and it wasn't anything on purpose. It's just accident. That kind of stuff happens. And somebody's like, she doesn't like being called Kathy. I was like, oh. Not that there's anything wrong with that name. Wonderful name. But we all have holdups. So, I mean, it's our name. We get to pick what we're called. So, I mean, it's not like looking down your nose at them. Like, people get upset when you mispronounce their name. It's like, is Stefan here? That's Stefan. And they're like, JJ, you don't understand. And I'm like, no, it's JJ. So it's really good to kind of...
Of course, I have my last name is Grota, and I could say it 50 times, and people still... You know.
Favorite story time.
Yeah.
So we go to the youth rally up in Broken Bow 2 years ago.
Yeah, you set this guy up for sure.
I did not. No, I didn't. I did not. Chris... if you haven't got to spend time away from Chris, if you haven't spent time with Chris, he's got these great ideas, and he had something that was in the mix, and I asked who was doing announcements and found him and said, hey, you need to make this announcement. Chris Grota is doing it. It's going to be good. So he goes, Grota, and I look as he's writing it down, and I was like, G-R-O-U-D. Whatever D, and I'm like, man, you know what? If he's spelling it out phonetically, whatever. I mean, it's as long as he gets it right. So I said, it's Chris Grota, and we get up there, and I mean, it's not 3 minutes later. I caught him right before he wrote it down. We went in, and he's going through it. And he looks over at me and goes, Chris Grota, right? Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's it. And I mean, everybody.
Because if you tried to correct him, he wouldn't have gotten it then either.
No. Yeah. So I just maybe it was dishonest. I need to repent because it wasn't that, and I said that it was. But I mean, I said yep, and I mean, I looked over, and you were laughing. You were red faced laughing. Michael was laughing real hard. And I had a remix for a television show as my ringtone and forgot to turn it off. And then Little Einstein's dubstep or whatever it was came on, and everybody laughed at me about that. So it's a fun evening.
You're really on a roll that night.
Really on a roll that night, Mr. Grota. But Catherine Baker, 10 a.m., registration starts at 9:30. Lunch is provided. And the RSVP was for a couple weeks ago, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you, show up. And if they run low on food, I'll bring some.
That RSVP thing was our brother Baker's idea. We don't really require it.
No,
we don't do that.
Just show up. There's going to be plenty of food. Yeah. And if there's not, they know they can call me and Chris. We'll go pick up whatever. So if they have 100 extra women, we're going to get it taken care of.
Absolutely.
So if you haven't been to a ladies'
day before,
what's one more quiche? Capiche? If you've never been to a ladies' day, this is a good one to start. Catherine is
but you got to be a lady. You can't be a man. They won't let you in the door there.
Nope. Got to be a lady for a ladies' day. And I know she'll do a good job. I know my wife's looking forward to it. I know your wife's looking forward to it. So, going to be a good day.
We recorded Give Me the Bible yesterday at Tyler. And one of the sections that I had to deal with was women's role in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just knew that somebody's going to watch it and think, you know, we don't live in that day and time. We live in this day and time. And, you know, y'all are just making a big deal over nothing. We live in a women's role society, you know, and that's good in a lot of ways, right? You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, in the church, it's just not like that. And I just wonder how long it's going to be before we have, you know, we hear of women's liberal movement. When are we going to have a men's liberal movement? You know, a men's lib. You know, I mean, because you'd be thinking, here, this is a ladies' day. Are there going to be men out here in the world that are going to be offended that they can't come in?
So you hear about equality with men and women, and it's always CEO positions and engineers. We need to have more women there. But you know what I never hear of? More women in the coal mines. Never hear about equality in the coal mines. It's always equality in the high-paying jobs. Don't ever hear about equality in the trash. We still call them trash men, and that's one they let go. Never say it's trash person. I never hear that. So, I mean, it seems to be like the higher paying jobs. We need more women in that role, but trash collectors, nah, guys, y'all got that. That's okay. I don't get that.
Hey, remember when we went through the phase of where we, like janitor was a despised term, so we call it a custodial engineer?
Yeah, I remember that.
And so, you know, we give fancy titles to everything. You know, why was that?
I don't know.
Well, they just wanted more. They wanted to make it sound.
No more waitress, it's servers. No more stewardess, it's flight attendant.
So neutralize it.
Yeah, no more redneck, it's country music star. So, I mean, I'm joking. I wouldn't want to denigrate any of our country music listeners out there. And for those of you who are country music fans, denigrate means to disappoint or to let.
They're going to tune us off.
They are going to tune us off, and I like country, so I'm just kidding.
All right, well, let's talk about old Jonah. You know, he's the guy that got swallowed by the great fish.
I sidetracked us. Let's talk about what you were saying. About the women's role. And there's a point that I've always liked to make, is the body of Christ is the body. You have to have all working parts. Everybody has a role. Nobody's role is more important. And unfortunately, what we have in American society today is that women want a different role. And it's like, your role is so important to the work of the church. And men's role is important for their work in the church. It's like I've said before, a body that works has two working hands, two working feet, a heart that pumps, a brain that works, a spine that works, bones that fit together. How effective is a body that is a pile of big toes?
That's scary to think about.
Yeah, it is scary to think about. But we wouldn't even call that a body. We call it a pile of big toes. And, I mean, there's some things you and I do that are fun, and there's some things you and I do that aren't fun. But the body functions. It's supposed to function efficiently and effectively. And when we look to the Bible and follow those roles, and I'm sure that's the point you made on the show, is we follow the roles that God has given. It's not to demean anybody or to make anyone feel bad. It's to run effectively because God knows us best.
You know, I did point out that women can bear children and men cannot.
That's true.
God has already physically designated two different roles. Just in the physical makeup of men and women, you know, we're different. Where our brains are wired different, and so you know, that's the first clue that there's something different between us. And you know, when you get into Paul's his logic there, he says Adam was first formed, then Eve. There's a creation order that's mentioned, and then there's the fact that Eve was deceived. And so there's a sin issue. It almost looks like maybe this is a consequence of the sin. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe it's a create. If it wasn't a creation issue, it was a sin issue, and it was both. He lists both. And so here was my plea to the people was, look, you know, We teach submission to God on every point of doctrine, whether we understand it or not, whether we agree with it or not. We're pleading with people to yield to the wisdom of God. And we may not be clear. You know, we might not have every point worked out in our mind. You know, how do you honor your wife as the weaker vessel, and you know, how does that not be offensive to the women of today? Well, you know, you're talking about a more valuable, fragile. You handle those things with care, and you know, it's not supposed to be demeaning. It's supposed to impress upon men to handle women with care. And in light of all of our spousal abuse, you know, this nutcase that opened fire down there in South Texas on that Baptist church the other day, you know, the guy that pulled, you know, went out there with his gun, shot up everybody. He had a history of domestic violence. He did not honor his wife as the weaker vessel. If he had done that, that would not have happened.
He was a wife beater when he was in the Air Force, was put in prison for a year, was a child beater, beat some animals at some point, was charged with that. I mean, just a rotten individual that you don't beat women. That's
okay. Well, now we are assigned to the topic of Jonah chapter 1 today.
Yeah, I guess we do need to do our topic.
Well, since we only have 5 minutes left in the program, we about to do it. No, I'm just kidding. We've got a few more minutes than that. But let's do dig into the Word. Let me give you a little breakdown here. We are talking about chapter 1 at this point, and this is about Jonah's sin, his refusal to show God's patience. And you look at the order here in the objection and the ordeal. And in verses 1 and 2, you got the order. God commands Jonah to go to Nineveh and preach against its wickedness. Could you read that for us, please, sir?
All right. Now, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, the great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish away from the presence of the Lord.
You know, just talking about that phrase, away from the presence of the Lord, it reminds me of Cain when he left the presence of the Lord. Why would you ever want to travel away from God's presence?
It doesn't make sense.
I mean, just think about it. You know, you've got to be really, you've got to be really deceived to think that you could make it away from the presence of the Lord.
You know, people, I mean, have that mentality today, if you think about it, amongst our denominational friends, is that we're going to do what we want to do. And now, we're going to worship you how we want to worship you.
Now, JJ, I know we're in this restoration church mode.
Right.
And we've got to talk about sectarians. But I've come to the point where I can't just label the sectarians anymore without including us in it, because we've got a problem.
We do have a problem. You're right. I mean, we do have a problem. There are some that are binding what's not meant to be bound. There are some that are loosing what's not meant to be loose.
And there's some don't care.
Some don't care. Yeah.
So
those that are not striving to do as the Bible says, how's that? And basically the principle is you'll take what we give you. And we can sit down with someone and show them what the Bible says about worship. And if they don't like it enough, they're just going to pretty much say, in lesser words, of, well, we're not going to change. We're going to do what we want to do. And Jonah did what he wanted to do. And that was to not do what God wanted him to do. And he thought that he could get away.
Yeah.
And people today think that they can get away with not being obedient to God, and it's going to work out.
So you just said a word, obedient.
Obedience.
And if you don't want to be obedient to God, and you're seeking to get out of obedience to God, you are walking away from the presence of the Lord. That's a dangerous spot to be in.
That is a dangerous spot. And there are people that don't like the concept. I know of somebody that's like, you know, when I die, I just want nothing to happen. And the response that I have to that is, you don't get that option.
Mm-hmm.
you don't get that choice. You don't get to say, this is what I want for eternity. That's not how it operates. It's, we have a choice. We can be right with God or not be right with God. And we look through the Bible, it's the most beautiful love story that's ever been told, with God providing a means of salvation for his people. If you study the Bible and study it properly, you're going to see that God loves you. And the natural response is, well, I need to obey. I need to do what the Bible says. When we start focusing on ourselves and trying to shape God after what we want him to be, it doesn't work. And you can see this lack of respect that Jonah has of, I don't want to do that, so I'm going to run the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And there's so many different ways in which we do that today. We can do it by, you know, what we call, I might call sins of omission, not taking care of the business that we need to take care of. Failing to be the good Samaritan in somebody's life.
Right, and even that is like, you know, sometimes you have to preach truth. Mm-hmm. And there are places that don't want to upset people, so that they instead are just, they're not going to preach anything wrong, but they ain't preaching anything that's all that right. There's a congregation one of our elders attended when he was in college, and I didn't find that out till after I got here, of course. But he had attended there in college 20, 30 years ago, and the congregation was 200-300 members. It was a lot of people. And I remember being in preaching school. Their preacher had left, and they couldn't afford a preacher. So I went out there as a preaching student, and one of their elders had said that the preacher had admitted that he would look over the audience, and if he thought that his sermon was going to offend somebody there, he would change his sermon on the spot to water it down so that nobody would ever be offended. And it's not surprising that congregation went from 200-300 people down to about 10, 15. And I remember being a little too brash as a preaching student, and I told him, I said, if y'all aren't evangelizing now, if y'all aren't going to actively seek the truth and y'all are looking to sell your building to go buy a new one, why don't you just donate that money to a good cause and go worship somewhere else? I mean, if y'all aren't going to put the work in that Christians should, why buy a new building if you're going to put in the same effort you're putting in now?
That's a good point.
I don't think they listened.
In fact, let me, you know, this gets us, you know, I'm going to chase this little bunny rabbit.
Here we go.
What would it be like, you know, could we even have a congregation without a building today?
Yeah, I think we could. I mean, the worldly mentality says you couldn't, but you and I have kind of talked about this, so I can go, I can see it. So it's really not fair.
Yeah,
but I mean, you consider when North Jefferson, we're a split off of a larger congregation, and our congregation met in the Civic Center and grew. So
and was the biggest ever was in the Civic Center. Well, I'll tell you what, that's interesting. So he wants to flee from the presence of the Lord. And what is his objection, in verse number 3?
His objection is, but Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish, so he paid the fare and went into it to go with them to Tarshish away from the presence of the Lord.
Well, you know, I'm looking at a map here, and I'm trying to find where Tarshish, it's like way over here, west. I mean, like, you go into it is way west of the Bible lands. I mean, you're talking about all the way across to the western edge of Egypt, and then over into the what would this continent be over here?
That'd be Europe.
Would that be Europe? Yeah, and well, you got. I mean, that's even far away. Where is Spain? Where is that?
Europe.
Is that right here?
Yeah.
This is Spain. Yeah, so that's where he is. That's where he's trying to go. That's as far west as you can get away from where he's supposed to be.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. You and I talked about this before the show went on, is you see Jonah willingly running away. But if you look over in Jeremiah chapter 49, we see a bunch of judgments that are against the people that opposed God. And one of them was the judgment of Edom. And in verse 8, he said, "Flee, turn back, dwell in the depths, O inhabitants of Dedan, for I will bring the calamity of Esau upon him, the time when I punish him. God wasn't encouraging them to run away, because they were going to run away. The area of Edom was very rocky and mountainous, and they had caves. If anybody tried to fight them, since they were already kind of in the mountains and such and hills, that if somebody tried to fight them, they had the advantage. It's like Jerusalem was a city on a hill. And if somebody was powerful enough to be able to overtake that, they could run in the caves, and they knew them like the back of their hands. So he's saying, go run, dwell in the depths. But he wasn't saying, you can get away from me. What he was saying is, you can't get away from me. What has worked against man is not going to work against me. And we see that principle over in Hebrews chapter 4 in verse 13, where he says, and no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. So we can't hide. We can't run deep. We can't get away from God, which Jonah proves. And God even says, run to the depths of what you know the best, and you're not going to be able to get away from my justice.
Well, that being said, let's talk about what the Lord does in verse number 4.
Mm-hmm. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up.
All right, let me stop you right there. All right. What looks like a storm, I mean, this is a storm, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a tempest. There's this wind. There was a great storm on the sea. And there's nothing different about a storm on the sea except for the fact that God summoned this one.
Right.
You know, this didn't happen by, you know, I mean, did he use the laws of nature? Did he command the laws of nature to do this? I mean, it must have, because it used natural elements. But it's not just happening like storms pull together nowadays, you know, what we see in the weather and meteorology. God summoned this storm. And what happens to the boat?
The mariners were afraid. The boat was threatening to break up. The end of verse 4. Verse 5, then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his god, lowercase g, and they hurled the cargo that was on the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had laid down and was fast asleep. So the captain came and said to him, what do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. So we see a people that, a polytheistic society, multiple gods are worshipped. They're all viewed as the same. And they get down, he's like, wake up, you need to call on your God. We're calling on our gods.
It's interesting that they have that kind of faith.
Yeah,
they have a faith that says this thing is too big a deal. We need help.
Mm-hmm. It's a misplaced faith.
It's a misplaced faith. But it's interesting how close they get to the truth on the deal here.
Mm-hmm.
So, verse number 6 says, the captain approached him and said, "How is it that you are sleeping? Get up and call on your God. Perhaps your God will be concerned about us so that we will not perish." And each man said to his mate, come, let us cast lots so that we may learn on whose account this calamity has struck us. Now, this is where it gets interesting to me, because it's through the casting of lots that they come to figure out the mystery, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so they cast lots, and the lot fell upon who?
Lot fell on Jonah.
Yeah. Now, God has used things like the casting of lots to reveal himself. And there's another time in the New Testament where they cast lots to decide which one of the guys was going to be the next apostle to take Judas's place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here they go. They know the qualifications of an apostle, and they pray about it, and they don't even make the choice. They don't take it to a vote. They cast lots, and somehow what normally is a game of chance has wound up becoming it's more of a tool of revelation to find out who God really was selecting.
Oh, yeah. Well, also, you get the cast lots for Jesus' garment, which was fulfillment of Scripture.
Wasn't that interesting? I mean, I could see how God could foresee that happening, but to determine, to identify
I see what you're saying.
Who God's choice was for an apostle,
mm-hmm.
How come he didn't just directly tell him through the Holy Spirit? You know, I mean, here's, you know, they're using like the casting of lots. And then here, it's interesting because it is absolute truth that Jonah was the one, the reason why all this was happening. Now, let me ask you this question. This is a good thought-provoking question. What kind of harm can I cause people because of my own sin? The consequences of my choices.
My thoughts are provoked.
Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, think about how, what if I tell a lie? How many people is that going to affect?
Yeah. I mean, our bad behavior, you and I were talking about before the show, bad behavior can end up being an example to God. I wouldn't recommend doing that, but our behavior can have adverse effects on Christianity, but it can also let people see what you're not supposed to do. We see right here that his bad behavior ends up leading to something that was pretty good for others, but it sure wasn't good for him if he hadn't have changed.
Well, what happens in verse number 8 and following?
Verse 8 and following. Then they said to him, tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? And where do you come from? What is your country? What of the people are you? And he said to them, I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, What is this that you've done? For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them.
So he is very forthright about his situation.
Right.
Which is very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
He's not hiding anything, but it's interesting that they have found him out, and he confesses. And so they said to him, what should we do to you that the sea may become calm for us? So in other words, you tell us, what are we supposed to do to you to fix this problem?
Mm-hmm.
They know something has to happen. And he said, you got to pick me up and throw me into the sea.
Which, you know, is another way. I wonder if he thought he's getting away from God and he sees death is imminent and he's like, well, I'll just drown. I'm still not going to have to do what God was going to tell me to do. So if he's like, if you throw me over, y'all be saved and he'll just sacrifice me and I'm going to go ahead and...
These guys are pretty cool, though. I mean, if you look at their response, he says, of course, pick me up and throw me into the sea, then the sea will be calm for you, for I know that on the account of me, this great storm has come upon you. However, the men, what did they do? They rowed desperately to return to land, but they could not, for the sea was becoming even stormier against them. Then they called on the Lord and said, we earnestly pray, O Lord, do not let us perish on the account of this man's life, and do not put innocent blood on us, for thou, O Lord, hast done as thou hast pleased. And so, you know, they're praying to the God of heaven.
Yeah,
God, you
they're
know.
Praying to our God. Now, granted, these were probably
Gentiles.
So they're under the law of the patriarchs, so they obviously weren't faithful to God, but this helped them go back in the right direction.
Well, it really did, and it's interesting that they had enough respect for this God they really didn't know, but they believed in him. And they prayed to him, and it's interesting, they tried to maybe do it a different way. They maybe tried to spare Jonah his life, if there's any other way other than throwing you back into the water. And so it's like they rowed harder to get back to land, but they couldn't do it. I mean, why'd they waste their energy doing that if they believed that this was the right thing to do, which was throw him in the water? And I think what it is that sometimes the will of God goes against our human nature. Think about that for a minute. I mean, you know, if the only solution is throw this guy in the water, well, that's kind of like us killing him. You know, we're going to throw him in the water.
Well, consider it. We're almost like EMTs of faith, or mm-hmm. policemen or firemen of faith. I mean, you look at 9/11, and I was in college when 9/11 happened, and you could see in videos the majority of people were running away. Cops.
Mm-hmm.
The firemen were running toward it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, I mean, we want to get out of danger, but some people are wired different and they run. I need to remember this is a good sermon. Is some people are wired different and will run into a burning house or will run into a building that's collapsing to save people. And Christians need to be wired different. I mean, as well. So I think that's something to develop.
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of people in the Twin Towers that died trying to save people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they could have gotten away, or obviously there were those that were trapped, but there were some that still, you know, stayed behind to help. But can you imagine just trying to? I mean, if you're above where the planes hit, there is no getting down. You're trapped.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we forget the horror of that day. There were people that were jumped. Just, you have to make a choice. Am I going to burn up in this inferno, or am I going to jump off and die landing on the ground somewhere? Mm. Which is going to be better? The death is coming. Is it, you know, do I burn up or what? You know, and I think I'd have a hard time making that choice, because I'm not. I don't picture myself being a suicidal individual. You know, I can't hurt me. You know, I don't know. Maybe, you know, the heat, you know, may change my mind. You
see,
know?
I'm still not ready to deal with 9/11 in some ways, because I remember that, people jumping out. And a couple of years ago, Nicolas Cage made a movie about 9/11. As I didn't even, I'm like, I can't. I'm not ready. I don't want to see it. And a lot of other people didn't want to see it either. It was a flop.
It's unfortunate, though. You know, a lot of our younger people, and they're coming of age right now. It's been enough time, but they don't remember it.
Well, you look,
even some of the adults today were, you know, the young adults were too little to remember it back then.
Oh yeah, and you know, it's interesting. You got these kids that are going to college and being pushed socialism and communism and how great it is, and how it's not fair that people are rich and they need to rob from the rich and give to the poor.
Except for their own pocketbook.
Pocketbook, yeah. They like to take it from somebody else's pocketbook. And there was a joke that I'd found online of a guy that said, I lost my family to communism, where I said something didn't like, they took my wife and kids and they killed them, and I almost starved to death, but I was able to escape the country. Socialism does not work. And then there's a picture of a 19-year-old kid that's like, well, actually, like, they know better than the person that experienced it. Socialism is terrible. It's never worked. It's never gonna work. And you get kids that haven't experienced it, and all of a sudden they don't think it's as big of a problem as it is. And with 9/11, we saw what radical Islam can do. And some of these little idiots, I mean, these little kids and left-wingers forget about what radical Islam can do. And they want to just invite everybody in no matter what. Just open up those borders. I mean, it's the globalists. Open the borders up, and it doesn't matter the danger, and they forget what's happened in the past. And what is it? You forget history. Those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it.
I was going
to
say, you know, sometimes you can't forget what you haven't studied.
Right. And it's so interesting, because you look at a list of, like, all of these terrorist things over the past 100 years. And, I mean, 99% of them are Islam. And if you ever talk to a liberal about it, they say, well, what about the Crusades? I'm like, you're going to throw something up from 500 years ago.
Totally different dynamic.
Totally different dynamic. Yeah. Totally different time. Totally not New Testament Christians. And that is going to be your response? That is idiotic response. It's not taking ownership of what's happened.
Most people who criticize the Crusades, by the way, aren't aware of the whole story.
Yeah, they don't
either.
Know the whole story. They will say, y'all fought. What?
Okay. Well, you got a great point there. And but notice this. I mean, verse number 15, and we only got two verses left here. He says, they picked up Jonah and they threw him into the sea, and the sea stopped its raging. Well, that's faith in operation. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had to do this by faith, because this is counter intuitive. I mean, this is not something that their brain says, hey, I should do this. They're actually having to trust. I mean, mind you, the fear of the storm, they're all going to perish if they don't do what God said to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to save his life, and it feels a whole lot like an execution, like walk the plank, you know, kind of a thing. And so they immediately threw him, they picked him up and threw him, and the sea stopped its raging. I mean, just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says the men feared the Lord greatly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. Now, to me, You know, that's you know, I don't know if that's a full conversion or if they just, you know, had a healthy dose of respect for God, but it prompted a feeling and a response in them that was not there before.
Yeah. And how neat would it be, you know, we get to heaven and maybe meet some of these guys that were under the law of the patriarchs that were like, that was the day that I knew it was God. It wasn't these other gods. I knew it was our God. I mean, how cool would that be?
Yeah, yeah, isn't it cool?
Yeah, and you look over it, in indirect exposure, is Jonah's bad behavior led these people to God? In Acts chapter 9 and verse 7, Paul's bad behavior led those who were with him on the road to Damascus to hear the voice of Christ. And I'm not saying that if you just get tired of Christianity, go be a bad example and maybe you'll lead people to Christ. That's idiotic, that's stupid, that's lazy. And people actually think that sometimes. But what we see here is that there can be a silver lining in bad situations. We encourage everyone to be faithful to God. But we see here that this was an indirect exposure to God that these polytheists had, and they came to him, and that's pretty awesome.
Now, God has used various tools to capture the attention of people.
Mm-hmm.
Never in the history of the world was there a punishment like this.
Mm-mm.
And think about it. God appointed, just like he did the storm, he appointed a great fish, like a whale, to swallow Jonah whole, all right? And Jonah was in the stomach of this fish 3 days and three nights. Now, think about this. I don't know about stomach acids.
In fish.
Bile. Yeah. I don't understand about the physical dynamics of this. You got to understand, I don't perceive that the stomach of this great fish was big and spacious like the artist paintings are.
See,
okay?
And that's my hold up is when I was a kid I watched Pinocchio. Remember when Geppetto went into the mouth of the whale? Mm-hmm. And there's like all this spacious room for him to hang out in.
And lighting, yeah.
And all that is my personal opinion about it is that this was also miraculous in that he was pressed with weight that he couldn't imagine and he wasn't dying.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. How much oxygen is there really in there?
None. Yeah. So,
I mean, what does it smell like?
Oh.
I mean, well, I don't think we really ever really stopped to think about what this could be like. And I don't know if Christian Courier or any of those guys that usually write on unusual topics like that have actually dealt with this or not. But I'd like for somebody smarter than I am to kind of give me, under normal circumstances, what this would be. I mean, if you get swallowed whole, you're going to die normally. Under right. normal conditions, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have oxygen deprivation and the stomach acids are going to eat at your flesh. You know, You're turning into food for that fish. And he is 3 days, three 24-hour increments, as far as I can tell, before that thing vomits him up and spits him out. All right? Just think about that. This is God getting his attention. And after all he went through, and even after all of his praying, even after he goes into Nineveh and actually preaches, he still has this horrible attitude. I mean, it's like his attitude didn't really change.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I just
That's wild. But we see that happen today. If somebody has a rotten attitude and they get cancer, and all of a sudden they're back with God, I'll do whatever. I'm back. Yeah. That cancer is cured, and what do? Right back.
Go back
to
it.
Attitude.
Apparently, you know, it's kind of like that. You know, people get in that hospital. Well, if I get well, I'm going to start coming to church all the time. And then, don't you hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've come to the end of this. I don't know. You know, we're not going to exhaust all this, but I think that we've dealt with the text. Let me ask you, JJ, one thing that has that stands out as a application lesson for you today in all this?
You can't hide.
You can't hide.
You can't hide.
Yeah.
No matter what you think you're getting away with here on earth, you can't hide. God sees it.
The thing that stands out to me is the way that God revealed Himself to the people. I mean, even you think about the Magi, they have a star in the east, and they conclude it's the King of the Jews. How they know that? God has revealed Himself in so many different ways, and people come to faith through these different means, in the scriptures, and so we know by these scriptures we have faith too. But anyway, God is using these circumstances to teach us lessons. And I think about His mercy, His grace, His forethought, His desire for our salvation, and He will allow us to suffer to bring us to our senses,
mm-hmm.
and protect us the whole way through it.
Tough love.
Tough love. You're going to hurt, but you're not going to die. You
may hurt now, but you'll have eternity later.
Yeah.
You know, we get a special listener in the chat box. Lainey.
Lainey, are you listening this morning?
Love Lainey. She is wonderful. And
she's sweet, isn't she?
She is very sweet and just a great person.
And not just to certain people. Her being sweet to everybody.
Yeah. So it's good to have her listening. I forgot how old she is, but how many teenagers are going to spend their Wednesday morning, listening to a regular radio show? Now, of course, you and I are special, but that's awesome. Love you, Lainey. I'm so glad you tuned in. And for all those others who tuned in, we love you too. We love you too. And we are glad that you tuned in. Encourage you to continue to tune in.
We're going to tune out a little early today. I think we've covered our material, but I just want you to remember that you can write your questions in, and we love you and appreciate you, and we want you to remember that we're
proud of you.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.